He's got a beautiful backswing.
Dad, oh, he got all of that one.
Oh my gosh.
That is amazing.
Layup with an iron into the hazard.
Oh my God, you had to deal with the golf course people too!
Well, that wasn't quite what I meant, you know?
Welcome in, everybody, to another edition of the 73rd Hole. I'm Colby Powell alongside Taylor Williams. With me, as always, glad everyone is with us. Make sure you go follow us on social media at Colby J. Powell, at T_Williams101 on Twitter, and follow this podcast on Twitter at the 73rd Hole. Find us on Instagram, 73rd Hole, and then Facebook, the 73rd Hole Podcast. If you search for 73rd Hole, you will find us. And remember, wherever you are listening to today's podcast, make sure you subscribe and rate the podcast. We would greatly, greatly appreciate it. And now we are excited to welcome a phenomenal guest to the show. We had Craig Humphreys on a few weeks ago, and now we are thrilled to welcome to the show his son, Sam Humphreys, to tell his incredible story. Sam, glad you could join us today. How you doing?
Hey, I'm excited. Y'all have one of the best new podcasts out there. T-Dub, good to talk again. And Colby, like, let's just have some fun and talk some sports and golf.
Yeah, we're able to bring back some great memories and also share some great knowledge that, you know, we've been able to gather along, you know, our years of playing and of watching the golf as well. And we have a great story for our listeners today here for Sam Humphreys. You know, your story's been kind of going around the country as we've seen the last few months, especially. You know, we had the big article in our local paper, The Oklahoman, written by Jenny Carlson, kind of about your journey ever since kind of you've gone from high school up into where you are now. Then there was a Golf Channel article written by I want to get the author here right. Carson Williams wrote an article about you back on March 28th, kind of just detailing everything. So in your own words, Sam, just kind of describe, you know, just, you know, what, not going into everything exactly in the detail right now, just kind of what the last, you know, 7 or 8 years has been like for you.
Man, it's been kind of the definition of a roller coaster, you know what I mean? But, I mean, I wouldn't change it for the world, like going from being on probably the best high school team in the country
let's talk about your high school team, because that team was loaded. I mean, college golfers 1 through 6, that's unheard of in high school golf.
Yeah, it was crazy. I mean, like my freshman and sophomore year, we had guys like the guys that were seniors, like Austin Fuller and Alec Heinen, and then you had a guy, Caleb Myers, who, I mean, he was no slouch either. He didn't play college golf, but he could have. And then Nick Heinen and me were the top five. And then you had guys like Hayden Wood who were just coming up, like, and just starting to hit their stride. And guys like Griffin Pierce and Tyson Reeder. And later on, like guys like Austin Eckroat.
How many straight state titles has Evan North won or did win during your stretch there, Sam? Was it 10 or 11, something like that?
I think it was 12 and we lost 13. When I left, we had won 4 in a row to make it 10. And so I think they won 2 in a row after that and then lost to Owosso and then won another. So, yeah.
And for anyone out there listening, that's in the 6A of Oklahoma State, which is the highest level of golf competition here.
It's really good golf.
Over the years, they've had some of the best, not only teams in the state, but in the country.
Yeah. So, anyway, so basically, like, the high school experience is like playing on a college golf team, you know. And so, like, I played my freshman and sophomore year, was playing really good golf, and then kind of went into a slump my junior year of high school. And then after my junior year of high school, I got to back up a little bit. So I didn't make the team. I played six man all year on the team and in my junior season, and then worked really hard. And the summer after my junior season is when I really got my scholarship offers and played some really good golf in the summertime. And came back for my senior year, was playing really good, but the way we had to do it for my senior year, our team was so stacked because we had a new young kid coming in named Austin Eckroat, and so, like, it was he was on the top five for sure. And so then you're just where you had to qualify for every tournament, you know. I remember my last college, I mean, my last high school tournament, I shot 8 under and finished third. Dahlke came in and beat me. It was at Lincoln West at the Edmund North tournament, and Brad Dahlke came in and shot 61 and beat me by a shot. And then,
woo-hoo.
Yeah, well, no, so that's a funny story. Like, I finished out on 18. I thought I'd won, and then I hear that Drew Eisen comes in ahead of me, so I thought I finished second. And then, oh yeah, by the way, Brad Dahlke came in and shot 61 and beat you also. But that was my last high school tournament. But we had to qualify at Carson, and I never really played good in the qualifiers at Carson. So my junior or senior year, I didn't play in state because the rule in Oklahoma is you can't take an individual or anything. And so, so I'm the only player in Oklahoma history to win all state but not play in state. So,
yeah, that's
weird my senior year.
It had to have felt weird for you to not play in state because you know you're a college-level golfer. You know you're a good player. You shot 8 under at Lincoln, and you're not getting to play in the state tournament. I mean, that in itself had to have been tough.
Well, and this will kind of I was just going to let everyone know how good of a player that Sam was out there, especially as a junior player. You know, I'm 3 years older than Sam is, and we played numerous of rounds and tournaments together because he was one of those players who was good enough to play up every age division. So if he was, you know, the very first term we ever played, I was 11 years old, and he was 8, and he was out there kicking my ass. And then, you know, when we were 14, he was 11, beat me. And then when I was 17, he was 14, beat me, you know. So you know, you've been playing against the high-level competition for as long as you know. And, you know, I'm sure that had to be kind of, you know, a twist in your sails to say, you know, per se, you know, whenever you're used to playing such as high-level golf and all of a sudden going against all these great players. And then, you know, you were kind of the last man out, you know, cherry-picking, that kind of thing.
Yeah, you know, and so, like, But that's the thing that I think set me up for the good perspective on all the trials that I had after that. You know what I mean? So, like, right after state, I guess right after the summer of my junior season, I really wanted to go to OU, like, and sign at OU. And my teammate Griffin Pierce ended up getting that scholarship, you know, and so the day before signing day, I thought I was going to go to Southern Miss. I was going to sign at Southern Miss the next day, and Coach Brogdon from Tulsa called, and best call of my life. I mean, he just said, like, I'm going to give you a spot and an opportunity here at TU, and so that was kind of, like, it's kind of like I got overlooked a little bit in high school, but it wasn't like, I just think that it was the best thing that ever could have happened to me, you know, the trials in high school, because it kind of led up to what was going to happen in college. So.
Yeah, so then you redshirt at Tulsa. You redshirt, you're trying to get your game in place. And which courses did y'all play at Tulsa? What were your home courses? Because there's some elite golf in Tulsa, as everybody knows.
I mean, it's hard to get any better than the courses in Tulsa. I mean, we got to play. Monday was Southern Hills. Tuesday was Tulsa Country Club. Wednesday was Friday was Cedar Ridge. We played the Oaks. And then we could play the Patriot whenever we wanted. So, I don't know if there's a better lineup for golf courses for a college team, right?
No, there's not, and especially, you know, you're going around to all those different great courses too, and one of the great things about it too is, you know, you're playing on different greens almost every day, you know, or essentially a different green each week too, so that's going to keep your game in top-notch shape, and you're seeing different, you know, different alleyways of fairways to hit and everything like that. So not only being able to play a great course, but being able to play numerous great courses just elevates your game even more.
Yeah, so you're playing all these great courses. You're getting your game in shape. You redshirt. You're ready to go. Kind of season's getting going. And then the University of Tulsa gets some tough news. Take us through what that was like.
Yeah, so that was crazy. So I redshirt my freshman year, and then I played one man pretty much the whole year in Tulsa, the second year. And everything's great. Like, we played a great schedule. Then it's around the end of the season, and Coach Brogdon was getting older, and he calls us in. He says, we have a team meeting with the athletic department, which was weird, like the athletic director and everything. So we just assumed that he was going to retire and we were like going to meet our new coach. But when we went in there, Coach Brogdon didn't know what the meeting was about either. And that's when like we started getting texts about like the golf team being cut for budget reasons. But, it wasn't necessarily for budget reasons. I mean, we can dive into that if you want to. I don't mind. But
we've got nothing but time. Yeah, we want to hear the whole story.
I mean, I think it's kind of ridiculous if you have all those great courses in Tulsa that you don't have a college golf team at Tulsa, you know. And they blamed it on the budget reasons, even though we had $10 million from the golf alumni and boosters by the end of the week and they wouldn't take it. And like the next day after they cut the men's golf team for budget reasons, you buy a massive scoreboard for the softball team, you know? And so there's underlying reasons that I won't get into on this podcast, but I mean, it just has to do with, maybe a little corruption up there at the, University of Tulsa Athletic Department.
Well, I remember whenever that happened, the day that happened, I was working for the franchise local radio station here in town, and we were all kind of shocked. It was weird to see a school like Tulsa, because we all sat around and kind of talked like, people who are from Oklahoma kind of know a little bit about Tulsa, and it's a private school, and Tulsa's got a little bit of money, and it didn't add up. You know, we were doing 2 + 2, and we weren't coming up with 4, trying to figure out why Tulsa was cutting its men's golf program. And then I, of course, obviously being in Oklahoma Sports Talk Radio, know your dad, know of your dad, and I saw your stuff on Twitter whenever all that was happening, and the Tulsa men's golf program getting shut down. So I remember thinking how weird that was and kind of how surreal that was that the golf program was being shut down, and it left a lot of guys like you kind of in limbo. So how did you deal with that kind of emotionally, just knowing that you'd finally found your golf home and now it's kind of been ripped out from underneath you, and you have to pick a whole new place and a whole new way to start over?
Yeah, you're right. Like, so the first, I mean, you're just shocked, and like, not just the golf at Tulsa, like you just started college and you just made these new friends, you know? And so that was really tough. Like, 'cause you just meet all these people and then you just leave like the next year. And so, that was tough just personally, but, like the other thing that Tulsa said when we left, you know, was, oh, well, they can freely transfer. Well, when I talked to schools like whatever, like Central Florida or, North Texas or other places that I had talked to coming at Southern Miss, like other places that I had talked to coming out of high school, they just didn't have any spots, much less scholarships. Like, they were like, we already offered our 2017 guys, you know? And so like, it was hard just to find a team with a spot, much less a team that like actually wanted to fill a spot, you know? And so that was kind of an interesting process that summer. But
I can't remember off the top of my head, Sam, what day or month, what time of the year did they alert this news to you guys from Tulsa?
It was like April. So
like literally the worst time to be trying to recruit for the next year.
Everybody's full.
Yeah.
Everyone's normally full by the fall, the previous fall before for their next year's recruits.
Right. And so it was like, kind of like, what are we doing? And so I went home and I was playing around with my buddy Rian Gibson out here at Oaktree. And it was like, I mean, later in the summer, it's like July. And I said, he's like, bro, like, why do you not know where you're going? Like, I'm like, it's not my fault. Like, I don't know. Like I've called all these people. I remember that morning I talked to Texas State and like, they just didn't have any room. And so, he goes, well, I have a friend up there in Kansas City named J.W. Vandenborn. I'm going to tell him about you, and then you give him a call later today. And I gave him a call later, and Coach Vandenborn was awesome. And I said, I'm going to come up tomorrow or whenever. I think it was like a couple days later, come on a visit, because, I mean, time was of the essence. And I went up there and I told Coach Vandenborn, I'm coming here before he even offered me a scholarship. And so,
nice.
And so I just said, I want to play up here. And it was really one of my only options, but I mean, it was the best thing, literally the best thing that ever happened to me, was going up to Kansas City. But
yeah, and that's definitely, you know, it helped propel your game, you know, to hellers. You played extremely well once you got there before some of the other stuff happened. And to let other people out there know, you know, just kind of how big of a shock the Tulsa thing was. You know, all of us football fans can remember a few years ago when UAB quit their football program, and then there was the big riot. And I mean, UAB, they were winning like two or three games a year. You know, it's not like they were a stellar program. I mean, Tulsa was one of the top notch programs in the country golf wise.
Playing Southern and the Patriot every week. Those are two of the most elite courses anywhere, especially in the state of Oklahoma.
Yeah, and I mean, it just had nothing to do with the success of the golf team. It had to do with like underlying lawsuits and stuff. So, but anyways, when I got up to UMKC, like, it was another culture shock. Too, just being living in the city and then meeting all my new teammates. And at Tulsa, my teammates were from like around here and Southern America, like South America. And when I get to UMKC, pretty much all my teammates are French. And so it's just like it was a weird deal. But
where's the campus at in Kansas City? Is it like in inner Kansas City?
It's right on the plaza of Kansas City. Yeah, and so. It's a little south of downtown, but, but anyway, so when I got to UMKC, the biggest thing for me, the biggest change, in my game and my personal life was definitely like the discipline. Like the, Coach Brogdon was great and he was the best players coach possible at Tulsa, but Coach Vandenborn, I mean, he's pretty strict and was a good disciplinarian, and I thought it was the best thing that ever could have happened to my golf game. So
when you say disciplinarian, Sam, was he disciplinarian as in like practice schedule or like how you guys like what you were able to do kind of off the course, kind of or like in the classroom you had to, you know, study so many hours, you know, kind of dive into that, you know, what do you mean by the kind of disciplinary action?
Just you knew your standard, you know what I mean? If you miss a workout, you're going to do a punishment workout. If you miss two workouts, you're not going to play, you know, like, and it's stuff like that, like same thing with class and yeah, consequences. And then, on the course, like he had a lot more, communication with you between like, what are you doing on the course? Like, why did you do this? It was just a different culture. And I thought it was really good for me.
Yeah, so you get up there, you start playing the best golf of your life, you're playing really well, and then obviously things take a really unexpected turn with your cancer diagnosis. And, you know, I can't imagine what that was like to go through, but just kind of take our listeners through everything that you went through that summer after what I guess would have been your redshirt sophomore season at UMKC, and just kind of how that all hit you and your family and how you made your way through that.
Yeah, so... it was after my redshirt junior year, after my redshirt junior year.
Okay.
But, anyways, I mean, so I play in the regional down at OU and I come back, to Kansas City and, I get all my stuff. I come home, I start practicing for the state stroke play up in Tulsa, Tulsa Country Club. And I'm out there at Oak Tree practicing with my dad. And, like you've done a million times. I mean, just stepped on the face of the club and it came up and actually hit me right in my tumor that I didn't even know I had. Just the biggest God thing that's ever happened. Miracle. But like, I stepped on the club, had some pain. I mean, We've all had that pain, but like mine was like lasting for like 2 days. So I went to the doctor and he's like, we got to do all these tests. They did all these tests on me and it never really hit me that it was like cancer, but at the same time, like I knew I had pain. And he's like, we're going to have to see you next week, but, just take some pain medication throughout this weekend. And so I said like, screw it. I'm going to go play up in the state stroke play this weekend and just take a bunch of Advil and whatever. And so I went up and played in that. And when I got home, my dad said he gotten a call from the doctor that we need to go in, that Monday after that tournament. And that's when, I mean, that's when they told me I had cancer and told me that I was going into emergency surgery tomorrow. And, that's when, I've never done more praying in 24 hours than I've done, than I did right then for that surgery. Yeah. And so basically then, after that, like I recovered, it was like 3 weeks and I felt pretty solid just to do normal things. And about 4 or 5 weeks after the initial surgery, like I was back hitting balls again, trying to get ready to go to school, in August and, go play my last season. And, basically they do a 6 month or a 6 week, 6 week CAT scan. And it came back and showed that I had, that the cancer had spread to my lymph nodes, and I had to go to, the like chemo doctors and figure out what they wanted to do. And they chose like the most, like the toughest rounds of chemo, 'cause I was younger and healthier than a lot of people could do. And so I could do, like more in a shorter amount of time and try to knock it out. And I mean, that's something I wouldn't wish on anybody, was the chemo. So, but yeah, the chemo, I mean, it was like, it was four rounds. So I went through four rounds. And so it was like one round was like, you go Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 1:30, and they're just pumping bags of fluid and bags of basically the poison that kills your cells. It doesn't just kill like the cancer cells. It also kills your real cells. And that's why it's so tough on the body.
With no break for 6.5 hours?
No break. Yeah. Yeah. You're just sitting there with it in your port, and you just kind of lay in bed. And most of the time I slept, but yeah. So like you do that Monday through Friday, and then you get 2 weeks off and try to recover your body. So the first two, I just always tried to keep a positive mindset. That's kind of like my motto, is like a tough mindset, a positive mindset. And so I just, like, I would go to chemo and then I would go try to do something normal just to feel, upbeat and everything. And then once the 2 weeks, like the week after is brutal, 'cause you're coming off of all those drugs and everything. They're pumping like steroids into you and everything. And, the second week after, you're kind of starting to feel like yourself again, and then you start another round. So like by the third round, your body is just kind of shot. And I mean, I'll never forget, like I would lay on the couch and watch football with my dad. And I mean, it was like I would lay in the fetal position, watch a little football, and then wake up, drink pickle juice, and go back to sleep. Like, because the pickle juice helped me not throw up anymore. But then the fourth round came, and then, I mean, chemo is not something I wish on anybody, but then that same CAT scan comes back and you're like, now we get to see if this works, and the blood test and everything. And it came back, and luckily the numbers, said that I was cancer free. And to this day, like, the numbers are the same. So praise God for that.
The prayers were answered.
So, yeah, exactly.
So what was that moment like for you, your family, when you get that test back and you know that you don't have to go through that again?
That was the best day ever. I mean, you just don't want to ever. It was a lot of stress relief, because for a long time, you're just like, the worst part is not knowing. The worst part is definitely not knowing, like, before the test. Like, I would rather just know and know what I need to do. But it was like, wow, like, I'm finally going to be able to get back to normal life and honestly get back to competing and playing golf again. Like, that's one of the first things that crossed my mind. And it was just a great day. Like, the first thing I did was go up to Stillwater and hang out with my boys, and I mean, just be a normal person again, other than a cancer patient. But like, the number one thing that I learned through all of that was it kind of gave me a why and a purpose of to inspire people that they don't have to stop living like when they have cancer. You know what I mean? Like I would go hit balls. Like I did everything I could to try to be myself, and it definitely helped me keep a positive attitude throughout the whole thing. And like I met so many great people and throughout all of the chemo sessions. And I mean, that was probably, definitely the toughest thing I've ever been through, but I wouldn't change it for anything because it gave me a whole new perspective on life and how it can be taken away like that. And how, like, if you just live for today, and like I was living like I should have died yesterday. And so like, because that, if that club never hit me in the tumor, like I wouldn't have known for another year and a half, they said. And so it could have, it definitely would have spread to like my brain and everything. And that would have been way worse. And so like, it kind of gave me a new perspective on life, like kind of just being thankful for everything, you know? So.
Yeah, it can. It definitely puts everything in perspective. And like you said, you know, those kind of blessings in disguise, you know, you have the, you know, the club hit you in a certain area, and, you know, it happens to us all the time, you know, and, you know, you don't ever realize that it could be something that eventually saves your life like it didn't, it potentially did for yourself. And that's, you know, like you said, all your prayers were answered. And thank God that you're here to be able to have this conversation with us today. And so you kind of broke down into it, Sam, and I was real curious about it too, because, you know, I was with my mom when she went through cancer herself. So it's chemo, very similar to what you went through. And I could just see, you know, just this type of resilience and strength that was needed to get through such a tough task. And kind of like you said, it just kind of changes your perspective, you know, going forward, you know, to where kind of, you know, almost, I don't know, you know, kind of, if this is true, just let me know, you know, where, you know, like an issue will come up, you know, kind of what I would phrase as like a first world problem, you know, like the TV doesn't work or something like that, right? You know, and now yeah. All of a sudden, you know, now it seems a little easier now to deal with, you know, or what are some of the other things that have kind of opened your eyes to going through such a traumatic experience that you can't really teach that to anyone, you know, it's just something you have to experience firsthand.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's just, like you said, I think you broke it down perfectly. It's just like a perspective thing. Like, obviously, we want to do well with, like, for me, with golf, like, we want to succeed. But at the same time, when I was going through chemo, like I wouldn't even know who won, like, big tournaments in the summertime. You know what I mean? And it's just kind of like real life hits. And the number one thing you have is your faith and your family and your friends. I mean, it just kind of gives you a whole new perspective on, how like people, when I had cancer, like people, I just felt so appreciative that they would say things that they probably wouldn't normally have said, just because like, you don't just say those things to people that are healthy. You know what I mean? Like they would just say, I really appreciate you, or remember this time we had. And that's one thing that I encourage people to do is like, do you care about someone, do go tell them that, you know, like, so that's another great thing that, came out of everything. So like, yeah, it was tough, but I mean, you just got to look at it as a stepping stone and as a positive in your life. And, you know, your mom went through it, I mean, she must be a super tough lady. And I mean, I can't even imagine, going through that again, you know, I mean, it's just, I don't really know how to explain it, C-Dub, but yeah.
It's very hard to put into words. And, you know, yeah. Like you mentioned, you hadn't changed it for the world. And, you know, unfortunately, every time there is a horrible thing like that, there are at least a few positives that come out of it. And, you know, we look on your, you mentioned earlier, you got to meet a lot of cool people through this, and you go on your Twitter profile and your pictures with Lil Wayne, who I couldn't count the amount of hours of songs I've listened to his and, jammed out to. So, you know, kind of go through that. What was it like meeting Weezy? And then who are some of the other cool people that you mentioned that you were able to meet through that tough time?
You know, so my dad's best friend is Skip Bayless. And so he obviously has had Lil Wayne on his show a few times. And, they're good friends now. But when I went through the first initial surgery, Skip was trying to figure out like what would put me in a good mood. And he texted Lil Wayne and just said, hey, if you could just like do something for my man Sam, like he's gone through a tough time, told him who I was, kind of that I was Skip's friend. And Lil Wayne just said, what's his number? And he texted me and called me like that day, and we talked and kind of struck up a little relationship. And
did you know that he was going to text and call you, or did you think somebody was playing a prank on you?
No, I woke up and I literally thought someone was playing a prank on me.
Did you have a text that said, hey, this is Lil Wayne, what's up?
Yeah, like it was a long text, like, and just saying what's up. And he like, and then we like called, he called me later. Like, he, the nicest, most kind-hearted person in the world. And then, so this summer, for my birthday, Skip invited me out to a show to watch Undisputed and play some golf at Brentwood Country Club with him, and meet Lil Wayne. And so we meet Lil Wayne. I mean, that was the best thing ever. And then Lil Wayne invites me and my mom backstage for their show that night, and like gave me a shout out. Like, I mean, the guy is awesome. Like, I mean, he was one of my favorite artists, like, no, by far my favorite artist before, but and then just to see that he's like an amazing guy. And honestly, that encouragement definitely helped during chemo. And I mean, it's weird to say, but like, yeah, like I would consider us like friendly. I mean, it's crazy, but he's an awesome guy.
Yeah, that's cool. That's really cool. Sam Humphries joining us here on the 73rd hole, kind of telling his whole story. Got into the heavy stuff there with the cancer and then talking about Lil Wayne. Let's let that breathe for a minute. Let's take a quick break, and then we're going to come back and let Sam continue to tell his story. Everybody stay with us here on the 73rd hole.
When something the size of a golf ball hits your roof, you need to call McRae Roofing. McRae Roofing is Oklahoma's designer roofing service specialist. For years, Jeff McRae and the experienced team at McRae Roofing and Exteriors have served fellow Oklahomans by helping them with their roofing needs. McRae Roofing uses only top quality materials and professional crews to make sure that each job is done right, so it will give you the years of service, security, and protection you need from the unpredictable Oklahoma weather. McRae Roofing offers residential and commercial roofing, ventilation services, and custom copper designs. McRae Roofing is dedicated to exceeding the homeowner's expectations. It's not just a roof, it is your home's crowning glory. Call McRae Roofing today at 405-692-4000. That's 405-692-4000. Make sure to also visit their website at mcraeroofing.com. That's M-C-R-A-Y roofing.com. Don't get caught with a leaking roof. Contact McRae Roofing for your free inspection today.
We're back here on the 73rd hole. Colby Powell and Taylor Williams with you as always. And today we're joined by a very special guest, Sam Humphries. Remember, we had Craig Humphries, his father, on a few weeks ago, who's covered golf for a long, long time. And then Sam grew up playing golf and has had an interesting golf career from his experience in high school and then through college. Just took you through his bout with cancer. So, Sam, take us through what it was like once you get the test, you're cancer-free, and now you both physically, mentally, emotionally, try to work your way back into being a collegiate athlete, playing college golf, and just the process that it was to get you back on the course.
Yeah, I mean, so that was probably the most surprising thing to me, was how tough it was, and how, because I mean, when I was going through the chemo every day, like you feel sick, but you don't realize how much it's actually affecting your body. And then as far as golf goes, like, I wasn't playing any golf. And so I had to come back and be able to, get my body back in shape and get my game back in competitive shape. And, I mean, that just takes a lot of time.
I mean, did your swing feel the same? Did you have to, how many reps did it take to where your swing felt right?
You know, my long game came back fairly quickly, and I came back, like, my short game was just terrible. Like, I just hadn't practiced it at all. And so taking almost a year off. And so when I came back, I just hit it really hard that summer. I actually played good in the Kansas Am. I shot 3 under in that. And then, kind of like went through like, well, wait, first of all, I went back to school and then, just got to practice with the team that second semester. But that was just to go to school, really. Like, I knew, like, I wasn't going to be in competitive shape. And so that summer after, like, I just hit it really, really hard. And, got my body back in shape, was able to finally, like, feel like myself.
And this was last summer, right? So,
yeah, this was two summers ago.
So summer of 18.
Or wait, no. Sorry, this past summer.
Okay, summer of 19. Okay,
sorry, gotcha. It all runs together on me.
I understand.
Like, we've had two quick summers here. I don't know. So, anyways, so it was like you would expect. If you take a year off of something, you're going to be rusty at it. But I mean, I just worked my ass off trying to get back in shape. And so, you know, that's kind of how it went. But I mean, I kind of went through a dark time knowing that, like, I just thought that I would come back and be myself physically, not just golf wise. Like, I thought that I could just come back and do it once chemo is over. And it's kind of not like that. You kind of got to take it step by step, learn to walk before you run, you know, kind of mentality. So.
Definitely got to kind of build yourself back into it. And was there anything, like, was it just your whole body that was weaker, or, you know, because you mentioned, you know, your short game was kind of struggling. So I didn't know, you know, maybe it was like getting strength in your hands back, you know, or it was just a whole body experience, just trying to get everything back to where it needed to be.
The worst part about it was I had this thing called, so after chemo, I had a blood clot. The chemo caused a blood clot in my lung.
Oh God.
I had, like peripheral neuropathy, which is, if you don't know what that is, it's like where you have it's like when your hand goes numb and then it tingles when it comes back like awake. Like, I had that, my fingertips and my toes. And then like just physically, like just getting your strength back from, I don't know really how to explain it, but I mean, it's just like, your cells are building back up and you're feeling stronger every day. But yeah, I think definitely the toughest part of it all was the peripheral neuropathy, like just the tingling in my fingers, which finally luckily went away. But that the tingling in the fingers and the not being able to run because of my blood clot and stuff, like it was just took a little longer than I thought it was going to take after chemo. And you just hear the cancer free, you're like, I'm good to go. Let's get after it. You know, but you got to take baby steps after that. So
I can't imagine trying to putt with your fingers tingling.
Yeah, I know. It was super weird. Like, I don't even know how to explain it. Like, I remember one time, I was on number 16 at Milburn in the Kansas Am. Whenever it was. And so, I had like a 3-foot putt and I was thinking like, this putt could go anywhere right now. I was like, you never know, but with that stuff, but,
did you make it?
Yeah. No, I totally missed it. It went like, I lifted out and went like 5 feet. No, but, no chance. But,
So I mean, you're making your way back and everything, and you're kind of getting into it in the fall. So were you playing tournaments in the fall, or were you still trying to get back?
No, like I was just practicing with the team, you know, like I knew that, if I played, like, I probably wouldn't get my medical red shirt. And so luckily, like, I got my medical red shirt, after that. So, like I was qualifying with the team, but I knew I probably wasn't going to play. I was just kind of practicing every day and get back to school and get my grades, in shape to be able to play the next semester. So.
Yeah, definitely got to make sure you keep those grades up for sure. I know I dealt with that issue in college, and it can set you back for sure, my friend. So, So take us now between the period of where, you know, you're fighting your way back, you know, you're getting on your team, you know, the spring season looks like it's coming in, you're going to be able to have a shot, you know, and then all of a sudden, this horrible pandemic that's going on with the coronavirus is going around. So kind of take us through the process of where, you know, you felt like you were going to get back on the course and the competing again to it all basically just getting shut down on everything.
Yeah. You know, like I kind of struggled at the start of the season, and, in the springtime, I mean, in the fall. And so, like at the end of the season in the fall, I started playing really good golf. I started, really having some success. And I mean, that was, it was kind of like the kind of goal had been achieved of being competitive again. And I'm playing in Florida and Hawaii. I definitely like just finally felt competitive again, and my game felt in shape. I shot even par for three rounds in Hawaii. I finally felt like I was back to being myself again. And so that was really positive. And then anyone who knows Kansas City it's definitely like one of the colder places for winter. And like we play our first tournament in Laredo coming back. We always just go down there. We hadn't played any golf really outside, and we just go down there, shake the rust off. We played pretty bad down there, but we're just shaking the rust off down there. And then we're going to get into the swing of the season, and I'm super excited. Finally, like, feel like I'm competitive again. And we're about to go to Louisiana the next day. And, that's when all the, you know, the NCAA like basketball tournament stuff was going on, and we thought there weren't going to be fans. And then we thought it was an overreaction. We didn't really realize how big of a deal it actually was. And then like it kind of happened backwards for the players for the spring sports, because they canceled the NCAA tournament. But like, we don't even know if we're playing tomorrow, because then SEC and the Big 12 didn't cancel till later on, and our WAC tournament didn't cancel until like 2 weeks later, you know? So like all these tournaments had to trickle down after the, NCAA tournament, got canceled for us. And so I'm just sitting there thinking like, man, like I worked so hard to get back, and now like, of course, like, you know what I mean? But I just felt bad for everybody. You know what I mean? I mean, everybody worked so hard to be successful in college sports. And I mean, it getting taken away is, it's terrible. But I mean, I just hope everyone's staying safe because of the virus. But
yeah, I mean, yeah. It's weird times. And it's so weird. The whole shutdown of the sports world, as far as America goes, started right down the street at the Chesapeake on March 11th with the Thunder and Jazz. And then it was kind of a trickle down effect from there that impacted everybody at all levels of sports across the United States.
That's exactly right, Colby. I mean, I'm sitting there watching the Thunder game, and it's like the whole world followed suit after Rudy Gobert got the virus. I'm thinking like I was just sitting here about to watch this Thunder game, and then everything changed. Like literally the world changed. It was so weird, but.
Yeah, everything changed. To the point that yesterday we were all watching Tiger comment on his own Masters victory in a replay instead of watching him put on another green jacket, which was fun, but it's just, it's weird. It's weird times that we're living in, something that none of us probably ever thought we would experience, where basically the country shuts down.
It's insane. I mean, I don't know what to say about it either. I mean, it's just like you said, like if I heard that, like the U.S. or I mean that there was no sports going on in the U.S. and we can't go outside and whatever, like I would have thought we would have like been in a war or something. You know what I mean? I mean, it's just crazy. Like I don't even know how to explain it, but
yeah. So now the big question is for you. Now what? I mean, obviously we've kind of read your story a little bit and kind of what your plans are, but you've been through so much, and now your kind of senior spring gets robbed from you because of this virus and everything that's going on. And now you have to make another shift in your golf career. So what are your plans moving forward?
So that's kind of like the question or the answer everyone's saying right now is like, I don't know, but it's so true. Like, I just don't know. Like, I know that I'm not going to go back to school just because like I graduated in December and I stayed an extra semester after that just to be with the guys one last time and finish off that season. But it was important to me to go back to school this year and get my degree and come back and play with the guys. But I don't think I'm definitely not going to go back next year. I think I'm just You
think 6 years of college golf is enough?
Yeah, I've played enough college golf. but as far as the pro thing goes, like, nobody knows. Like, I play with all those guys out there at Oak Tree, and nobody knows. Like, it all depends on when they start, and then, like, for guys that were going to Canada, they don't know if they're even going to get to go to Canada. I don't know, like, about, like, Monday qualifiers. Are they even going to have Monday qualifiers this summer, or the Adams Tour? Like, we'll have to figure it all out. But right now we're just kind of in limbo as far as the professional golf thing goes.
Yeah, and you mentioned the Oak Tree guys there, and I remember the other day I texted you probably around 5 o'clock or so, and you got back to me later in the evening and said you were out there playing playing out at National, and I just asked you how your game was and who you were playing with, and the news is pretty intense with how the big names that were in this game that you were playing. So kind of tell us about, you know, what this quarantine's been like out there and some of the players you've been getting to play with.
It's been pretty awesome. I mean, we have, like, all our normal Oak Tree guys, and then Victor Hovland and Matt Wolf have joined out there now, and so they've been spending the quarantine in Stillwater playing at Oak Tree. So it's been like me, and then my other good buddy Quake Cummins just joined out there too, and so I mean, we've had games with Peyton Wood, Nick Heinen, Austin Eckroat, Matt Wolf, Victor Hovland, Quade Cummins, Gellerman. We got Rian and Creel and all those guys. I mean, it's Cameron Myers, Jackson Ogle, like all those guys. I mean, it's been pretty fun. And Tyson Reeder too. I don't know if I said him, but
that sounds like a group where you go out there and I was going to say, yeah. That sounds like a group where you go out there and shoot 65 and still lose money.
maybe not at Oak Tree, but it's just been awesome just to be around those guys and kind of learn and watch what they do. And I've known Hayden and Tyson and Nick, who went to OSU. Like, I've known them my whole life, but I've just gotten to know recently, like, Victor and Matt Wolf a little bit, like, and just like kind of pick their brains a little bit. I've played a bunch of golf with them lately, and it's just kind of interesting to see what they do different and how, to me, like, how, like, not impressive, but just how consistently good they are. Like, they're great shots. I mean, they're still amazing golfers, and they're great shots, but they're not any greater than what you would see on a normal day, like, of just the perfect shot of the day, you know? But the thing that really impresses me with those guys is their consistency and how they never make mistakes out there. And especially just playing with the guys, like, they really don't make mistakes. There's no pressure, but you know what I mean? And so it's just been really good for me during this quarantine to just be able to go out there and kind of learn from these guys. So
yeah, you mentioned picking their brain and kind of diving into kind of some things that, you know, what is there anything like in particular, you know, just besides from what you've seen, you know, just knowing that their misses really aren't, you know, that extreme compared to at least even compared to a normal scratch player, you know? So what are some of the things that you've learned from these other players that are on the tour, or, you know, just kind of just talking to them just through random chit chat, picking their brain?
Yeah. You know, like I was talking to an interesting thing with Victor the other day. Like, he was saying like how his game completely changed when he went out and just started working on keeping that right elbow connected on his backswing. Like, in college, he said he would just go out there and work on keeping that right elbow connected on his backswing, and he said eventually he got to where it just felt completely comfortable, and that's when he had all of his success. That was when he won the USAM right after that. Like, just little things like that, you know. And picking Matt Wolf's brain about, like, he has the most positive mindset, like, probably the most fun guy to play golf with ever. Like, he's just like kind of like the young Lee Trevino, like, never shuts up. Like, he's just hilarious, you know?
Yeah, we heard it a few weeks ago when he was talking trash to Koepka right before the tour shut down. He was telling Koepka to blow it past him with an iron so he could go to the bathroom.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, and so, like, picking his brain about his mindset and how he kind of, like, perceived like irrational fear. And like same thing with guys that I've even known for a long time that I just don't get to be around, you know, like Hayden and Tyson, and just watching their games progress, and Quaid, you know, it's just pretty impressive out there at Oak Tree right now. And I wish nothing but the best for those guys. I hope they all kill it once we're able to play golf again. So
yeah, absolutely. We golf season hopefully is approaching, and the storm season is also approaching. And as the storm season approaches in Oklahoma, you need to have McRae Roofing on your radar. Their commitment to craft is what defines McRae Roofing and Exteriors. McRae Roofing is a locally owned and operated roofing service company that is passionate about the quality of their roof creations. Jeff McRae, owner of McRae Roofing, views your roof like a canvas. Call McRae Roofing today at 405-692-4000 or visit them online at McRaeRoofing.com. Sam Humphrey's with us here on the 73rd hole. Now, Sam, we had your dad on a few weeks ago, and we were talking to him about all of the great golf courses that he's gotten to play, and then he rattled off a few that you got to play a couple summers back that even he hasn't had the pleasure, and most guys haven't had the pleasure, including on that list, one of the most elite and exclusive golf courses in the world, Pine Valley. A guy by the name of Tiger Woods lists Pine Valley as the number one course that he's never played that he would like to play. What was that experience like, getting to play up there and places like Aronimi, Congressional, some of the most elite golf courses in the world?
Yeah, I mean, that was, it's sometimes you're lucky enough to have like great friends that are able to do things like that. And so my buddy Mike Davis, I would go up from the time I was like 12 or 11, and that's why I'm such a big Eagles fan, is I would go spend so much time up there in Philadelphia. And so basically, like, he lives right off of Aronimi, which is also my favorite course of all time. Like, just long and straight and just a beautiful golf course, you know? And so, we got to play that all week. And then, we would play Aronimi in the morning, and then we would go play Marion West in the afternoon. And then, I think it was on like the Friday, Thursday and Friday, we would go play, Marion, which is just a beautiful golf course, but by far the hardest golf course I've ever played. It just doesn't suit my game very much, but which is why I think it's so hard. But I think that they should, I mean, that was the best US Open they've had in a long time, was at Marion. And,
was that Justin Rose?
Justin Rose, 2013.
Yep. Yes.
That was Justin Rose. Yep. And just a short and brutal golf course. Like, if you miss the fairway, it's so penalizing, and the tiny greens and obviously the wicker baskets. I mean, that's such a beautiful course. And then so that weekend, we never got to do it, but his uncle is high up in Pine Valley, and we never got to do it until we were of age. And so once we were, I think I was 15 or 16, and Mike had just turned maybe 16, I don't know. And so his dad took us and his uncle and his nephew out to Pine Valley, and we got to spend the night there. We got to play it, spend the night there in the cabins, and then play it again in the morning, you know. And so it was awesome. It was so cool. But I mean, I would consider Pine Valley is like something you can't ever describe. Like, it's like a tree line golf course, but with like sand and then like just grass sprinkled in. You know what I mean? It's kind of like a Pinehurst meets Whistling Straits meets Augusta National. It's beautiful.
Yeah, just a nice fusion of everything there. So two questions here for you, Sam. One, kind of talk about some of the – because I've been one of the biggest Pine Valley advocates my whole life. I've been trying to do everything I can to see pictures of the course, you know, and see some of the holes. And there's about six or seven holes out there that are just awesome, like the 10th hole, that little short par 3, number right. 5, which yep. is like a 250-yard par 3 up the hill, 18, right. 18 you hit over the road you drive into, from the way I understand it. So kind of talk right. about just going through some of the other holes that stuck out there for you there. And then I thought it was very fascinating. You mentioned that Marion was the toughest course that you had played personally. And Marion, I believe it's, what does it go, 6,800 or 6,900? I mean, it's not a very long golf course.
I don't even know if it's that much. I think it might be 67 or something.
Exactly.
But,
so So that goes into, you know, so what would you say to the people who are against, you know, you know, like shortening the golf ball and getting distance back and all that, whenever a course that's that short, you know, if you set it up right and have the right conditions, can play as tough as any in the world.
Right. Well, to answer your first question about Pine Valley, I'll tell you a funny story. So the first day when we got out there, the first hole, one of the rules for me was since I was younger, I had to play the members tees. I wish I could go back out there and play the back tees now. Like, obviously I get a whole new experience, but, the rule with the members at Pine Valley was if you're under a certain age, you have to play the members tees. And so, but anyway, so I get out there and I'm so nervous. Like, I'm sitting up there, these members and like it's just the group of guys and the caddies. I'm not used to having a caddy. I'm so nervous. Like, I'm shaking. I'm like, I'm playing Pine Valley right now with my best buds. And it's crazy. And I'll never forget it. I took a hybrid off the first hole, and I just cold topped it into this, like, into the sand right in front of the tee box. And I looked at my caddy. I guarantee you, he thought, oh, no, it's going to be a long day. But I got it together after that. But it was the funniest thing ever. Everyone started dying laughing. But yeah, I striped it off the first tee at Pine Valley. Anyways, yeah, the holes that stuck out to me at Pine Valley were obviously 18 is beautiful. I think it's one of the best finishing holes in golf. Kind of going down the hill and then back up the hill with that big bunker in front, the massive green, and the greens out there are Poe, but they're the most pure Poe you've ever putted on. The hole, the quote unquote devil's asshole, you know, that really stuck out to me, just how the short par threes and everything. And then the number one thing that sticks out to you when you play Pine Valley, just golf wise, is there's no rakes and there's sand everywhere. And so like you can catch a bad lie anywhere you go in the sand. And so, I wish I could remember it more. It's been like 9 years now, almost. And so, I wish I could go back and play it, and hopefully I'll get that chance someday. But I mean, I just remember it being beautiful. I'll never forget waking up in that cabin, just looking over. I mean, just one of the more beautiful places in the world. Also in one of the weirdest places in the world, like New Jersey, right next to some like crappy theme park. Like, it's
oh,
so
really?
Weird.
Wow.
There's no sign. Like you're just kind of driving almost, through a bad part of town, kind of like not a great part of town. And then you see this like rusty old water slide. And then you drive up and there's like just some guard gate, like right there. And he's like, all right, you guys can come through. And then you drive and it's like heaven right there. It's weird.
That's weird because Augusta National, I've heard described as like Augusta, Georgia is basically Enid. And then you turn the corner and you go through the gate and you're in heaven. So it sounds like Pine Valley is kind of like that too.
It's a lot. It's even more so like that because Augusta is a lot nicer than the place where in New Jersey where Pine Valley is. But it's kind of similar in that respect. And then remind me of your question, T-Dub, on the
I was comparing about, you know, because like when Justin Rose at Marion, he was, I believe he was over par or at best he was even or a couple under. And, you know, all these people talking about how, oh, the distance is just ruining the game. And it just really irritates me because, you know, great golf courses like Marion and some of these other short courses, you know, if they're set up right, you know, can prove to be tough. Like you said, the toughest course you feel like you've ever played. So just kind of go into, you know, what would you say against these people who are just saying that, like, you know, all these people hitting at 320 yards every time is ruining the game of golf?
Well, to me, nowadays, to make a course harder, you got to make it tighter with longer rough. I don't think that length necessarily makes courses tougher anymore. I think we learned that with Erin Hills. But, like, I think that Marion plays so tough because it's such a placement golf course with tiny greens. It's so tough off the tee because if you miss, then you have no chance coming into the green. And so, even though it's short, it's very penalizing and has some great par threes and great holes on it where you can try to hit driver and get yourself up there to where you have a wedge. But if you miss, I mean, it's almost better to be back with a 8 or 9 iron and at being able to spin it and just being in the fairway. And so making the player think, I think, is in this day and age kind of a lost art.
I completely agree with you. Yeah, it seems like anymore, you know, they make course, like you said, Aaron Hills, you know, 7,600 yards, make the fairway 60 yards wide, just hit it as far as you can. And some of these guys, even those long courses, are still hitting short irons in, you know, so it's not going to make a difference for most of them. And even if they can make courses 8,500 yards and they still figure it out. You know, whenever we had your dad on, Sam, he had mentioned that, you know, he had been to Augusta over 30 years now. And, you know, we were comparing, you know, the entrance to Pine Valley to Augusta now. And so how many times have you gotten to go down to Augusta with your dad, and you know, what have your experiences been like when you've gone down there?
I've been lucky enough to go 5 times now, and it's the best place.
Which years did you go, Sam?
You know, I went when I was younger. The first one I really remember is 2007. I got to go all week with Zach Johnson and Tiger battling. It's the first time Tiger ever had the lead on the back nine and lost it.
I remember, but it was tough. It was tough.
To Zach Johnson, right? Flipping wedges in all day.
Oh, he was just laying up and stuffing those wedges to 5 feet. And so that's the one I really remember. I got to go to the 2012 with Bubba Watson. Is that right? 2012?
Yeah, that was the big big hook out of the trees in the playoff, right, against Louis.
I didn't get to see. I had to come home. I think I went like Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Also, if anyone, I mean, you're going to want to go to the Masters no matter what day it is, but the best day is like Wednesday if you can go to the Masters. I mean, being able to go to the par three and you can have your camera out there. I mean, that's probably my favorite thing from my childhood of anything my dad's been fortunate enough to let me do. And, was going to the Masters and sitting down there on number 9 and watching all those guys hit those shots and walk by, and the players are more relaxed and you're able to like talk to them and get their autograph when you're a kid. And you know, that it's just such a perfect place with such like great tradition. That's why I would always put Augusta National number 1 on my book, just of courses that I've seen. I've never obviously been able to play it, but just because of the tradition, you're like, so-and-so hit this shot here, Tiger did this here, and just like the family aspect of the par 3 course, I think is awesome. And then I went to, the one with Kenny Perry. I saw Kenny Perry hit that.
2009.
2016. Yeah. I was rooting for Kenny Perry there, but Angel Cabrera ended up winning it over, was it Campbell? And maybe Kenny Perry was in that playoff.
And I remember too, Tiger and Phil were actually paired in the same group about 6 or 7 groups ahead of them. And they were both 7 or 8 under on the day. And then they kind of fizzled out down the stretch. But that was a very exciting Masters that didn't, you know, you see Angel Cabrera ends up winning and he went in a playoff with Kenny Perry, kind of overshadows, you know, how exciting of a tournament it actually was.
Yeah. And that was a cool finish. I mean, I think that honestly, we've seen 18 is such a great hole, but 10 I think is one of the best holes in golf. Watching it finish on 10 is kind of cool. Cause if you kind of gamble, like I gambled a little bit on, that they wouldn't finish it out on 18. So I got a really good spot to see Angel Cabrera win on 10 right there. And that was a really cool moment. But, I think the 10 is just one of the best holes in golf, and the Masters finishing on 10 was pretty cool. So
Chad Campbell was in that playoff too. I just looked it up. So it was a 3-way playoff.
Okay. Yeah. So you saw Zach Johnson, Bubba, Angel Cabrera. Who were the other two winners you saw?
I was at 2005. I went early in the week. I didn't get to see Tiger on Sunday, obviously. And then I think I went to one when I was younger, but I think it may have been 2005 and 2006. I'm not sure. I'd have to go back and look, but the first one that really sticks out is 2007, that I really appreciated it and got to go all week with my dad. And I'll never forget that one with Zach Johnson winning.
Yeah, it's the Masters is it's the mecca for golf fans, and it was weird this last week not having the Masters, but it was kind of cool because we got to watch a bunch of reruns. I watched the final round of the 97 Masters, the final round of the 05 Masters. I watched a little bit yesterday of the Tiger commentary, but I recorded it so I can go back and watch. I'll probably watch it all this afternoon. Did you watch any of the Masters stuff this week, and how weird was it, you know, for all of us as golf guys not sitting down to watch the Masters the second weekend in April?
Yeah, I watched both. I watched both the ones you're talking about. I watched the 97, and I watched the Phil one. I watched the 97 one, and I got a big kick out of one of my best friends, Hayden Wood. His dad was up there contending.
I saw that. Yeah, he was like fifth or sixth or something like that. He was way up there.
Yeah, he ended up finishing 12th, I think, but he was really up there and playing well. Which, Augusta doesn't really fit his game, like. But it was impressive to watch him back in the day and seeing young Willie make some bombs on the greens. And so, but it was also cool. Like, I noticed things like on 12, how Tiger just hit the left side of the green in 97. And ironically, when they replayed it this past year's Masters, he said, yeah, I had that putt in 97. But when I was watching it the other day, I was like, yeah, you just put it on the left side of the green. He said, I just aim at the tongue of the bunker and hit a straight shot, you know, and all these other guys are gunning for the pin. And we saw what happened last year, which was unprecedented, and all those balls in the water right there. But, and then hearing Phil talk about his first Masters, back in the day, I hated Phil just because I was a Tiger fan. But later on I get in life, like, I kind of identify with Phil, like how he plays, and I thought it was really interesting hearing him break down his thoughts coming down the stretch at Augusta in 2004. So,
yeah. Now, Sam, before we wrap this up, I've got to ask you. You said you're a big Eagles fan, which majorly bummed me out. I'm a Cowboys fan, which has been hard. It's been a hard life as a Cowboys fan. But I was wondering, you lived in Kansas City for several years. You went to school there, played golf there. So did you become a Chiefs fan there and kind of adopt them as a team as well? Or are you an Eagles guy through and through?
No, I mean, I'm an Eagle guy through and through, but I would consider the Chiefs my AFC team. You know, like you can't live in Kansas City with all that going on and not root for the Chiefs a little bit. And then we had some fun at that parade. That was awesome. That sounds crazy now with everything going on here, but there were so many people there. It was such a fun time watching those guys, being in Kansas City, watching the Chiefs go through that. But, yeah, I mean, I'm the biggest Eagles fan ever since T.O. and Donovan McNabb, and then spending a lot of time in Philly growing up. That Super Bowl in 2018 was just unbelievable. Like, that was probably my favorite moment ever watching sports, the Philly special. And
So here's the question. Who finishes their career with more Super Bowl victories, Carson Wentz or Nick Foles?
I would have to say Carson, because Carson already has one too. So no one likes to say it, but Carson led us that whole season.
He did.
And he threw a touchdown pass on a torn ACL against the Rams in a critical game that gave us home field advantage. And everyone likes to talk trash on Carson Wentz, but don't sleep on him. He's just getting healthy. He finally has some receivers. He's getting his offensive line back. We'll finally have a secondary next year. I mean, we still made the playoffs last year, and half the team was hurt. And so, I would say, watch out for the Eagles if you're a Cowboys fan. And and also, like, I'm a huge Thunder fan too, and like watching those guys this year was awesome too. But
I was actually about to ask you that, Sam, be our last question. You know, I know your dad covered the Thunder for how many ever years, and we'd had a lot of talks about the Thunder, and you know, I think everyone around here just expected this to be, you know, maybe 15-20 win season. You know, it was basically, we were going to wait around for the draft lottery to see if we were going to get the first pick, is what it seemed like. And then all of a sudden we come in, and you know, before all this stopped, we were a 5 or 6 seed going into the playoffs. So what were your thoughts on this season, and what are your thoughts going forward on the future of the Thunder?
You know, I thought this season was great. It was like a pleasant surprise. The team played great together. The CP3 kind of revived and taught those young guys. And, you know, obviously, like, a lot of people say, oh, their offense looked better without Russ. I don't know about all that. I mean,
we'll say it looked different.
It looked different, and they played hard together is how I would put it. But, obviously Russ is my favorite player ever, but as far as this year's Thunder team goes, like I was very pleasantly surprised with CP3 and, they were the comeback kids. They were coming back from 20, like every game. I went to like two games when I was back home and went with my dad. They came back from 22 games in a row. Like I think it was like the Bulls and someone else, but the Thunder, I mean, I would have to say that they would have had a good shot to win at least one playoff series this summer if it would have happened. But I think that they're on the right track, and they definitely have after this. I mean, they have a bunch of assets that they're able to deal. And if I mean the Chris Paul contract's kind of tough to get rid of, but.
But at least
you might not
want
to get
basketball. I mean, at least you're not paying him a bunch of money and he's playing like trash.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was going to say. It was like, I mean, now like he's kind of playing great basketball right now, so you might as well keep him while you have him. So, but I mean, Thunder basketball is the best. Basketball is by far my favorite sport. To me, it's the most entertaining sport. Like if I could play basketball, I would, but. Kind of figured that out when I was 6 foot white, can't jump, can't use my left hand. But, you know, so, yeah, so, but, I mean, there's nothing like Thunder basketball. The only two things that are the best two things I've ever been to are the Masters, number one, and that NBA Finals with the Thunder, so.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. That's pretty awesome. Sam, you were pretty awesome today. Your story is phenomenal. Couldn't have been more gracious with your time and just kind of taking us through everything. And we hope to follow you throughout your time at the Mini Tour. I know you got your degree and you're looking to get into broadcasting and stuff. You always have a place on the 73rd hole. Thanks for joining us, and we hope to do it again in the future.
Enjoyed it, brother.
I appreciate it, guys. T-Dub, tell your dad hi. Love y'all. I'll catch y'all later.
Same to you, brother.
Sam, you're the man. Talk to you later.
All right. See ya.
That was Sam Humphries joining us here on the 73rd hole. What a great interview from a great guy. His story is absolutely unbelievable. We appreciate everyone being with us today on the 73rd hole. I want y'all to do a favor. If you enjoyed today's podcast, go tell Sam on Twitter. Sam, you can find him at SamHumphries34 on Twitter. That's at SamHumphries34. Let him know that you enjoyed today's interview. Thank him for coming on with us and telling his story. It is such a great story. Everything that he has endured, we wish him the absolute best of luck going forward on the mini tours and in his pursuit in professional golf. And we hope to have him on the show again in the near future once he's able to get back out on the course and kind of follow his career as he moves forward. Thank you, everyone, once again, for listening to the 73rd hole. We've got another great interview coming up later in the week. That'll be coming out on Thursday, so keep an eye out for that. We've got a great, great guest coming your way on Thursday. Everyone in the state of Oklahoma knows this guy, and it should be phenomenal. So check that out on Thursday. And once again, we appreciate everyone listening to the 73rd hole.